Hello and welcome. This is Heavy Business. I'm Aaliyah.
And I'm Curtis.
And today we have on Duncan Evans, musician and other things. So thank you for coming on the podcast, Duncan.
Hello. Yeah, no problem at all. It's great to be here.
We're so happy to have you here. And why don't you give our listeners a little intro to who you are and what you do in the realms of music?
Yeah, okay. So these days I am a solo artist, a singer-songwriter. I've released a few albums and different releases just under my own name, Duncan Evans. But I will be releasing my next record under the name Duncan Evans and the Weeping Starlight. So it's kind of a continuation of me as a solo artist, but it's also kind of under a new guise. And style-wise, I guess we're sort of dark folk, we're post-punk, a bit of the gothic influence going in there. And this record is a little bit heavier than what we've done before. And we're much more of a band this time. The whole band plays on every track rather than on previous releases where some of the tracks were with the band and some were not. So that's what I do. I do lots of other things music-wise as well, some of which we'll get onto shortly. But that's me, Duncan Evans and the Weeping Starlight.
So you mentioned leading up to this that you are getting ready to release this album, and you're considering all the business end of things, such as whether to self-release, whether to go with a label. Can you talk us through what your thought process has been through that? Because I'm sure people listening, a lot of them have made or had or are trying to make decisions just like this for their next releases. So talk us through your thought process and what are sort of the reasonings you're coming up with to support your decisions?
Yeah, so basically we had a label who was going to release this record, and the label's unfortunately folded. So now we've got a bit of thinking to do about where we're going to go with this. But there are a lot of positives here. So I think the thing with going with a label is you've got to obviously look at what the deal is, and you've got to make sure you're not signing your life away. You know, especially with medium size and bigger labels, you're going to be signing a really detailed contract, you know, some of which I've signed in the past. And that's not always without its problems and pitfalls. So you've got to make sure that you're looking all that over and hopefully getting a lawyer to look that over as well. So there can be pitfalls of signing with labels, and you've got to find the right one for you and make sure that you're not signing your life away with that deal. So for me, I think we're still going to look at whether the right sort of label might take this on, and we may well release with a label, and we've got a few ideas about that. But also, I think in this day and age, labels are not always necessary at all. And I think there's a lot of benefit potentially in doing a DIY release, because sometimes with a label, actually, you have to look at what are they actually doing for you. And sometimes it's not actually that much more than paying to get physical releases like a CD pressed up, or paying for your distribution on the digital websites. And if that's all that's really happening, then actually you can probably do that yourself if you've got a little bit of knowledge around that. And I guess I'm quite lucky because I've worked with a few different labels, and I've built up that knowledge from working with the people, the staff at those labels. So I feel like I'm in quite a good position to actually potentially self-release this. So we're weighing up some different options. Obviously, the pitfall of doing this DIY is that it costs more money in terms of the initial outlay. But the benefit of that is, well, A, you can do it exactly how you want to do it. So if I decide I want to release vinyl and I can get the money together to release vinyl and get that pressed up, then I can absolutely do that. If I want to do a double gatefold or whatever it is, then that's completely up to me, and I'm not having those negotiations and those arguments or whatever. Hopefully not arguments, but you know what I mean. Debates about what's possible and not. And like I say, I feel like I've built up quite a lot of knowledge about that. So it's something to get clued up on if you're considering doing this. But yeah, there's a lot of information out there, and it's something which potentially a lot of people can do. And it's not nowadays, it's not necessarily looked down upon if you're self-releasing. You know, a lot of medium-sized and bigger artists are self-releasing, and it's perfectly acceptable. One thing that I would probably suggest, though, is give yourself a record label name. So that's what I'll be looking at doing self-release. Gives it an air of professionalism, and it also means you can sort of separate that business side, your label, from yourself as an artist. So when you're dealing with other professionals in the industry, you can talk with more professionalism. And who knows, potentially, if I start this label, then potentially I might one day release somebody else's records, and it starts to, build up a name in that way. So yeah, I think those are the main thought processes at this stage.
Sure. A couple things. I want to not go back too far right now. First,
Okay.
I've kind of had this thought process before where I've heard the argument that, like, well, when you're self-releasing, if you do give yourself a label name to make it look more professional, isn't that kind of like trying to hide the fact that you're self-releasing and maybe you should be proud that you're self-releasing, and maybe you want people to know that you didn't have a label. You don't want people to think, oh, it was released with this other company, but it's actually you. So I guess you would also weigh the benefits of you make it sound like that's definitely the right decision, but I think you'd have reasons for thinking that way. There might be reasons to do it a different way. Yeah.
I can see that. Yeah, I can see that some people are very proud to say, look, I did this myself and I'm self-releasing and there's no shame in that. And I don't think there is any shame in that. I just feel personally what's worked for me, which we can lead on in a minute to my work as a concert promoter as well, is to just separate out those elements a little bit. And I think that's partly psychological, because I think when we're artists, we like to think it's all about the art, and we're creatives, and we don't always like to think about the business side while we're in that creative process, But then when we get our business hat on to actually look at sales and look at marketing and promotion and PR and everything else, I feel like it's a different side of me there, and I feel like I want to wear a different hat, and I want to say, actually, no, this is my promoter hat that I'm wearing right now. And this is my label hat, if that's what I do right now. And then I go back to my artist hat, where I can be a creative man, and I can be as disorganized as I need to be, and I can just let it all flow in that kind of way. So I think it works for me, but I can absolutely see what you're saying, that some people just want to be loud and proud about the fact they're self-released, and there's no shame in that at all.
Totally. And I understand what you're saying as well. Now, not everybody listening, not every independent band is qualified or really experienced enough to do a self-release. They can always become educated, but if they are moving in the direction of trying to find a label or leaning towards that decision, you mentioned finding a label that's the right fit for your band. So, what do you think are the most important attributes to look at in a label to see if it is the correct fit for your band?
Yeah, so I think you've got to look at style first. So you've got to look at bands that are similar. Find out what your niche is. Find out what your genre is. And you have to, because some people like to say, well, we don't really fit into any category. We just do our art, and that it is what it is. You have to think differently when you're looking at labels. So you need to do your research. You need to look at the different releases that certain labels had. Look at the labels that all your favorite artists who you're influenced by are on, and then you can start to get some ideas and note down some lists of different labels that might be appropriate. But also you've got to look at the size as well, because the fact is, if you're selling out stadiums or something already as a DIY independent artist, then sure, you're going to be able to look at those really big major labels. But for most of us, we're not going to be able to look at those. So you've got to look at the size of the label and the scope of how many copies they are actually pressing up, if they do physical copies, and what level of band, if you like, they're releasing. And you've got to be realistic about that. So you can aim your I think you need a range, basically. So you can aim your sights a little bit higher than where you are, because hopefully a label will actually help to catapult you up to that next stage, which is another advantage. But you need a range, because if you're only looking at labels for bands with tens of thousands of Spotify listeners, and you've got five Spotify listeners, then probably you're not actually going to be able to get on that label at this stage. So I think it's your niche and your genre and the size of the label and getting a range there.
Really good. Good advice. Now you mentioned your experience with concert promotion and
Yeah.
planning. You were talking before about making a concert more of an event. So just go ahead and what did you want to bring up about this that you thought would be relevant?
Yeah, so I've started promoting some concerts locally and they've been going absolutely great. So we've either sold them out or we've nearly sold them out. And people have come back with, really, really positive feedback
What size of venues?
about 100 capacity. So we're not
Okay.
talking huge, but we're talking, yeah, about 100 capacity.
It's always good to plan your events realistically at a realistic size venue. That's part of planning, so.
Exactly that. So yeah, so I've acted as the promoter, and I've set up a promotions company called Widow Bird Promotions, and yeah, we've had some great success with that. So, and one of the big things, as you just mentioned, I feel is making these concerts into events which feel like something more than just another show that perhaps not many people are going to turn up to. So that's all about having a bit of a special, unique selling point. So you've got to find something. So it might be, so we did one where it was the another artist's first concert since lockdown, for example. So you advertise it as that. It might be an album release show or a single release show, anything that you can find which makes it into a special concert. It might be the only show that someone's doing in the country or something like that, if you can find that, but anything special about it. Then it's just really pushing the promotion. So all the usual stuff, all the social media, but also going to other shows, speaking to people, giving out physical flyers, posters up everywhere, local bars, local cafes, the venue itself, sending texts out to people in an appropriate way, like if it's something local and you've got your group of friends who also know friends and things like that, making sure that you're accessing your own social networks beyond just social media. Also putting some work into getting really good flyers done and posters done. So we used an artist over in Austria who did a special, really, really nice poster and flyer for us. It just looks fantastic. And straight away, it makes it feel like more of a proper event for people. And then it's just being really on top of ticket sales and things like that, and looking at ticket sales aren't going so well. How can you push different things? Where do you need to look at making changes in the way you're promoting? And just planning how the event's going to be, like, we've done some all seating events which really suited what we were doing for the shows, and just making it feel like a special experience for the people who are there, and then they're going to come back to the next show and the one after.
So, what are some strategy shifts that you have employed to help move tickets when you've noticed a kind of plateau?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I think so. Doing the text outs thing has worked for me locally. So sending texts out to lists of people who are friends who also have other friends, doing that. Looking at social media posts and different types of posts. So using live video content. So if the artists have live videos on social media or on YouTube, taking snapshots of those and putting them into social media posts so that people get a flavor straight away of what they're going to be getting at the show. So different types of social media posts, that's worked really well. And just, I suppose, upping the game with the number of social media posts as well, especially getting towards the date of the show. So more and more posts leading up to it, but varying those.
So it's not always the same post copy pasted 5 times a day, because that's
Oh.
spamming.
Exactly. No, it can't be. It's got to be slightly different every time. So I would never send out the exact same post twice.
So then kind of building on that, it's been discussed a couple times on this podcast, the idea of regional touring surrounding a release. How can you make those special and how can you time those correctly around a release?
Yeah, so I think the timing thing, I think you've always got to give yourself more time than you think. Because one thing that just happens again and again, I think for probably for everybody, is things go wrong, things get delayed. It happens with almost every release ever, as far as I can tell, that things get delayed. It's happened with my release, and we won't go into all of that because we're back on track with that now. But yeah, things get delayed, things get lost. So the biggest mistake not to make is booking your shows or your tours too early, and then you don't end up actually having the release. And that is number one, because it's much better to have the shows or the tour a few months after the release than it is to have them when the release isn't actually out.
Right, because a lot of your sales are going to happen at the shows, and if you don't have the CDs to sell yet, then you're kind of out of luck.
Exactly that. So I would say that's the one biggest piece of advice, is just give yourself extra time, a few months extra time, more than what you think you need, just as that contingency there.
Yeah,
But
because I mean, one thing to kind of clarify this a little bit more is, really, when you're planning out your tours, you might need to plan them so far in advance that you don't know your release date yet. You might need to plan it a year or 6 months in advance, especially if it's international or anything like that. So, is that kind of what you're talking about, the situation where you would be planning it before you even know when your release is?
exactly, it absolutely, but even if you think you know when your release is, and you're still sort of 4, 5, 6, 7 months away from that, you've got to, things can still get delayed at that point. It depends how far you're on with everything, but until you're absolutely certain that everything's going to be in place, then you don't really know when that release date is. So yeah, exactly, planning it way in advance and giving yourself that time. And yeah, often that's going to have to be when you don't know when is, so giving yourself extra time there. Yeah, and one thing that I'm working on at the moment is just building gig swaps with regionally. So we've got some things in the pipeline, which I won't talk too much about because nothing's certain in place fully yet. But we're in discussions with various about you putting on a show, them putting on for us, and it's just building up those networks and starting to get some touring happening.
I have a question
So
about that.
yeah.
So how do you do that without overplaying your hometown?
Yeah, this is a good question. Yeah, you have to do a lot of planning in terms of separating those shows out. You're absolutely right. Yes, it's not easy. So I don't necessarily have the magic answer for that, but apart from
Okay,
separate the
that's
shows
fine.
out. But yeah, absolutely. If you're doing your hometown once a week, it's no good. No one's going to turn up.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt. You were talking about taking that out into the concept of touring.
Yeah, that's it. So most of it there. So, but yeah, just building that, building up those networks, using social media. It can take a long time to build up these networks, but once they're there, you've got your Twitter followers, you've got your Instagram followers, and hopefully, if you're interacting and engaged on a regular basis, then you've got people who you can talk to about how you can get shows in different cities. So, we've got someone from Italy, for example, who's helping us look at even potentially getting a show over there. So that's for the future. That's more than regional. But if we can help you, maybe you can, and things start to come together in that way when we're just building on networks that you've built up on social media.
Awesome. So we are kind of running a little short on time. I want to move on to the next topic, which is kind of a broader topic. If there is something else you wanted to mention about this, let's cover that. About the touring or
Oh
gig
no, move on.
swapping.
No, feel free to
Okay.
feel.
So this overarching topic of self-promotion, DIY, what you can can and should do yourself, what you should get help with. What are your thoughts on this area?
Yeah, so I think this is something where you have to find a balance, because we can do a lot ourselves these days, and if you know that there's something that you can do yourself and there's no disadvantage to doing it yourself, and you've got the time and the energy to do it yourself, then in a lot of ways, why not do it yourself? Especially if it's going to save you money, and make you more money in the long run. But at the same time, we all need help doing it. We all need to work with other people on some of what we're doing. And it's you need to know what you can't do. So for me, I can't do cover art. I'm not a designer, I'm not an artist. Straight away, I know that I'm to contact an artist. I probably already know who I'm going to contact. I mean, for this release, we've already got the art done, by the way. But you know, if I in general, if I'm doing who I'm going to use, or I've got a few people in mind who I might use, and I know that that's something that I'm going to have to pay for, and it's going to just be right, and it's going to be brilliant. And if I didn't do that, then I'm shooting myself in the foot because it's going to be incredibly poor if I try and do it myself. And
Yeah,
yeah.
that's so important. Like your cover art is so important, and I see people kind of skimping on that too often, and it's really unfortunate. Sometimes it can work out, but I don't prefer when people are taking shortcuts on that.
Absolutely, it's what people see straight away, and when they look at the PR and when they look at you on social media or on your Bandcamp or whatever, they're going to see those album art pictures, and if they're not good, then they're not going to listen to your music. Basically, it just sends a bad, gives a bad impression, sends a bad message. And for me, it would be the same with something like PR. You know, I've talked about how, you know, I might have quite a lot of social media contacts and people who I link up with and we support each other, but that's in no way, shape, or form enough to be my own PR. So I would be certainly using a company, C Squared. That's where C Squared comes in, of course.
Thank you.
So it's really knowing what you can do and what you can't do, and it's planning for that in advance and get money. You have to spend some money on these things. So you need to get that all planned out in advance, and be really clear and be realistic. And if you're not sure whether you can do it or not, like if you don't know what PR is, then speak to some friends that have used PR before. Speak to people on social media who've used PR. Ask them how it went. Speak to someone who didn't use PR. Ask them how that went. And then pretty soon you'll have an idea. Because I remember a time when I didn't know what PR was, and now I understand what PR. It's like, yeah, you absolutely need that, and I need someone else to come in and do that and work with me on
Well,
that. Well,
actually, on that topic, since C Squared is a PR company, can you kind of describe what how has PR actually been a real benefit to you? Because I think some people underestimate and they don't really understand how important it is and what it can do for them.
yeah, so for me, it has got me for several releases, a lot of cover, absolutely loads of coverage. We're talking about loads of reviews, we're talking about interviews, and we're talking about just getting the press release out into the world and out into the media. And things have changed these days with at the time when premieres were the right way to go. There was premieres as well for single releases and for our streams and things like that. Yeah, you know, some of those have been with bigger name print magazines and things like that. So it's a route into getting your name out there, people to actually listen to your music via the media channel. It's been absolutely invaluable in that sense, really.
And so that was a great a description of how it can help. Have you noticed then that you have experienced growth of your projects because of it then?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, Spotify listens, sales, definitely, all of those barometers. I don't know. All of those metrics have definitely gone up, and yeah, absolutely. And social media followers as well. So yeah, absolutely. The growth has definitely happened as a result of the PR.
Awesome. Well, that's good to
Yeah.
know. It's always good to get some feedback about
Yeah.
the work that we do and to know it's been effective for you. What other things have you questioned about DIYing and
So I think a big thing is whether you can mix and master your own records, your own
Big
music or
one.
not. It's a big one. Now, for me, I do, but I think for most people, it's often a bad idea. And it really depends on what your skill set is, and how much time you've got as well. I think for a lot of people, they try and mix their own projects, and really they don't actually have the skills to do that. And they've maybe got the software and they think it's going to be easy. And then they kind of do it and it's okay. But really, the whole project ends up being let down by having a poor mix. So you've got to really ask yourself, can you, like, have you actually mixed albums before? Have you mixed albums that have been sold, that have been released on labels, that have had international releases and things like that? And if the answer is no, you've never done that, and you've only just been playing around on whatever, GarageBand or something like that, then probably don't mix your own stuff. You're going to have to pay someone. You're going to have to pay a pro mix engineer, a pro mastering engineer as well, to come and do that. I think in if you really have already done that, you know, if you've actually mixed other people's albums in the past, if you get paid to be a mix engineer, if you've done other work of that nature, then maybe you can do it. But even then, there are questions like, do you actually want the separation? If you can afford to get somebody else to mix it, maybe you want someone else's ears on it. Maybe their ideas are going to be useful. Maybe they can bring a side out that you wouldn't have necessarily brought out because you're a bit too close to that project. So I think that's a big question. It varies from artist to artist. But I would say if you're not sure about your own skill set, then you probably need to get someone else in for that.
One thing I want to point out too is there's a lot of people on Twitter and threads right now I'm noticing saying you don't need to mix and master your stuff and don't even worry about it. I know it's insane.
Yikes.
Bad
Yikes.
information. Very bad information. Just throw your stuff out there. No one's going to care.
Classic case
No.
of don't believe everything you read on the internet.
Exactly. And there's a lot of gurus that are saying this, believe it or not. I've been seeing this a lot on threads, and it's really bad information. If you're trying to be a professional, if you're a hobbyist, maybe, sure. But maybe. But
Maybe,
anyways,
only maybe, even
only
then.
maybe. Yeah, I'm just saying maybe as a hobbyist, but not as a professional. Anyways, I just wanted to throw that in there because I've been appalled at some of the comments I've seen lately.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that is really bad advice. You do need to mix your stuff. You do need to get your stuff mixed and mastered.
So, Duncan, for people that are wanting to, maybe they have the time and they don't have the money. They have the time to develop the skill set. What are some resources that they can look into that you've heard of? I've heard of some things. I don't know how good they are. There's like Nail the Mix, there's like URM Academy. Do you know of any resources that you can verify are quality?
Wow, that's a good question. Because I developed my skills a long time ago, I probably am not the best person to ask, to be absolutely honest, because I haven't needed to
Kind of a
use.
self-taught.
Well, I did this at university and then a lot of self-teaching as well. Yeah, there's some good books. There's the Behind the Glass books. They're good about music productions. Behind the Glass, I think there's volume one and volume two. There's a book by William Moylan called what is it, Understanding and Crafting the Mix, something like that. So those books are useful, but I mean, I think it's something you've really got to study, really go deep on, and you've got to have a lot of practical experience alongside that as well. So I would say just put the time into, you know, whatever it is that you're reading, whatever resource you're using online. Just put a lot of time and don't expect your first few tracks or even the first couple of albums that you do to be professional quality. You will develop those skills over time, but it's going to take really, if you're starting from zero, then it's going to take a few years, realistically.
Good point. Yeah. So it's like if you have an album that you want to release next year, probably going to have to hire somebody to do that. You're not going to be able to learn the skills in time.
I think that's right.
Was there anything else you wanted to mention in the area, in the region of DIY, don't DIY?
I think we've pretty much covered it, really. I think it's just that balance of having a great team around you, but doing what you can do and what's realistic for you to do yourself, and keeping that control where you want it to be and not giving that away. But just making sure that you've got the team around you for the bits that you can't do yourself and that you need to be working with people on.
Great point. Anything you wanted to bring up, Curtis, before?
I think we covered it pretty much. My only question is I was going to throw in the PR aspect for Duncan, but he already took care of it. He's done like, I
Well,
think, five projects with us, so we.
yeah, and he really did a good job explaining how it helps. But Curtis, wait, maybe you could point out what are you, some things that you see people doing wrong when they DIY PR?
The mixing and mast, oh, PR, not just
Mm-hmm.
releasing. They don't have the contacts to contact the journalists is the main thing. Like if nobody at Metal Sucks, for example, knows who you are and you want to get on Metal Sucks and you're just blind emailing them, they get probably like 1,000 emails a day, just as in one example. And they don't even always respond to us for, I'm not just saying Metal Sucks, but anywhere in general. Like we don't even always get responses from these people and we know them. So you going in there blind cold calling about your band when you don't have a professional bio done, you don't know how to do a pitch, you don't know the person at all, is probably going to get lost. So that, I mean, that's the main thing is a lot of people don't understand the actual legwork that it takes to do PR. And it's not just a simple send an email blast. I was just talking to a label about this morning. They had used PR before and it was just people doing email blasts. They weren't doing any follow-up or anything like that. And he's like, I can do that. I can just send an email of the MP3s. Anybody can. They weren't following up. They weren't asking people for things. That's the main mistakes is that they don't actually have the contacts and the ability to actually do a campaign. They think they do, but it's a lot more than what they think. And we've been talking to people for 10 years. Leah, you've been doing this for 3. Duncan, you've been doing music for what, 10 years, 15 years, something like that professionally. I think maybe even longer. And all of us have more contacts than the average Joe does. So that's the main thing.
And I guess I'll put in my anecdote as well. I'm a graphic designer professionally, but I'm not an artist. So generally, when my band has a release, we do commission artwork still. I just do the layout of the logo and the title on the cover. But that's also very important. You know, you don't want to just slap the logo on and slap the typography on. You got to make sure the font's the right fit. You got to make sure it's placed in a good spot in the artwork. That makes sense. Same thing with the logo, that it's the right color, texture, whatever, to mesh with the artwork and not stick out like a sore thumb. So both aspects of that are very important, and I don't recommend that people DIY them unless they are very skilled in those areas. Duncan, you already mentioned outsourcing the artwork, but even the layout, like with the text and stuff, people, I see some people underestimating the importance of that, and it does really make your release look a lot less professional if it's not laid out correctly.
For sure.
Yeah. So, anyway, what to DIY, what to not. All good points. Thank you so much for coming on, Duncan, and making time for us in your busy day. Good luck with your new release. Shout out, where can people follow you? Where can people find your music?
Yeah, so it's at Duncan Evans Music on Facebook and Instagram, at D Evans Music on Twitter. If you just type Duncan Evans Music, everything will come up. Bandcamp, Duncan Evans Music, Bandcamp, it'll all come up. So, yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And everyone listening, thank you for listening. And until next time, make like a bull and throw those horns up.